In today's episode, we are going to not shy away from controversy. We're going to discuss ABA, or Applied Behavioral Analysis. That may trigger in some people right now. I apologize, but we're still going to do it anyway, because that's who we are. I'm just going to read a passage from an article that was brought to my attention. In the 1960s and 70s, psychologists at the University of California, Los Angeles, operated two behavior modification programs. One aiming to eliminate feminine behaviors in male-bodied children. They now call that conversion therapy. And one targeting autistic children's so-called problem behaviors, Applied Behavioral Analysis, or ABA. The head of the autism program referred to his work as building a person. Decades later in Ontario, a radically inconsumerate legal context sees conversion therapy banned, while ABA receives millions of funding dollars. Drawing on legislation, case law, media, and clinical literature, I argue that the process of trans communities wrestling themselves out from under conversion therapy involved discursively shifting from having a condition to being human, a process of building a person still incomplete for autistic communities. While legal reforms protect some trans youth from harmful therapies, this does not extend to autistic trans youth, leading us to question at whose expense a rights-bearing trans person was built. So that was an extract from a Cambridge.org article called Building a Person, Legal and Clinical Personhood for Autistic and Trans Children in Ontario. So what do you think about that?
Well, the article in itself, again, is dealing with another issue, like the trans community, which, you know, you and I don't have a great deal of experience in.
Nope.
But the reason we've referred to this is because of the terminology being used, and we feel that's really important. We also feel that actually acknowledging the trans community and the issues that they have had to deal with are so important and do need to be talked about, but we need to get on board people who have experience and
yes,
can educate us and other people, because we can't speak for those individuals, and we do want to give them a space to be able to have their voice. So that will happen at some point. But regarding the conversion therapy and the ABA, when I first came across ABA, it was actually through my blog and through reading other advocates' work. And it wasn't something that I was really familiar with. I'm not sure if you were.
No, I wasn't.
And actually it was painted as conversion therapy. I read in several places and just comments on people's posts saying that it started as conversion therapy for homosexuals and, you know, trying to basically make people who are gay not gay, and that it was then used and transformed to make autistic people less autistic. And again, there has been a lot of confusion online because I've read so many people say this. From my research thus far, I've not actually found a direct link, but that's why I think the terminology conversion and ABA is so important, because actually the conversion therapy doesn't seem to be mentioned in relation to autism, but ABA does. And as you shared, conversion therapy has been condemned, whereas ABA is still going strong. And that's what we want to discuss today. Even though it might be obvious which way I'm kind of aligned with, we need to allow people to come to their own conclusions and just open up the discussion about ABA. If you're wondering where the interest in covering this has come from, there have been several posts recently from other advocates, one in particular, Quirky Stimical, and she actually shared about the fact that she did a degree in ABA and she used to actually practice this on children. And it was really interesting. And some people actually kind of attacked her. And I don't understand why, because she's openly admitted that she didn't see any flaws in this at the time. This was seen as something really positive. She believed she was helping these children. And for her to come out and share her experiences of something that she knows is very triggering and that people are going to probably have big opinions over and be quite angry over, I think is incredibly brave. Would you like me to just share a few of the things that she shared?
Oh, definitely, because, again, I don't know enough about this. I'll summarise what I feel so far. I don't know, you could convince me otherwise, but it seems that they both come from the same root. One is now essentially frowned upon, whereas the other one is fair game and is still widely used. And like you said, there's lots of money being thrown at it for some reason. So there's obviously something in it, enough for it to be mainstream and considered a legitimate tool. Now, the question I have is, what's the achievement? I mean, both seem to be, from the sound of it, trying to convert people into something they were not originally. So, for example, hello, homosexual person. You are now going to become a heterosexual person. Wow, how amazing, how transformative. The question I have is, did that person actually want to be converted? Were they a child forced by their parents, that kind of thing?
And is it even really a possibility?
Exactly.
No.
I mean, that's the thing. It's bullshit. If you are homosexual, you were born that way. And there's nothing wrong with being homosexual. So that's that statement on that one.
And something you've just said there touches upon the whole thing for me. There's nothing wrong with who you are, and yet there seem to be a lot of things out there designed to train you not to be who you are, but we will cover that more.
So before you continue, so that's why I want to continue that theme, is essentially you're not allowed to be who you are. Society decides what you are is less than or needs to change.
Yep.
Therefore, they will apply techniques to change you. This is very similar to the dystopian novel 1984, when Winston Smith ends up in room 101 and ends up being convinced that 2 plus 2 equals 5 through conditioning. Sorry, that's the kind of vibes I'm getting, but feel free to correct me notes.
To be honest, it's not even a case of correcting you at this stage. It is literally exploring this issue and discussing it. And as I said to you, I have been conducting research, speaking to people, and this is the tip of the iceberg. This is a massive subject, and I think it's just something that needs to be talked about. And it's interesting what you've just said there, because actually one of my notes I've written underneath some of the things that I'm going to share with you shortly is why. Just take everything else away. Why is it so important? Because you'll realise that much of the things we're going to talk about are, you know, the social aspects and making sure children learn these very strict, structured social things that I'm about to tell you. And the whole time I'm just thinking, but why? You know, is it for the child? Is it for the parent? Is it for society? All the way through, I think that's the question you need to ask yourself. There are things our children do, and there are things my eldest does that absolutely not acceptable outside of our home.
Correct.
But inside our home, to be honest with you, we are really flexible and very accepting. I'm not saying there aren't sometimes things you struggle with. And of course, there are things you have to teach them to be able to function in society to a point. And I think on the last podcast that I've not edited yet, I did say on there, you know, I've taught him scripts, I've taught him toolkits. Some people will go, oh no, that's going completely against him. That's making him someone else. And actually, that's me just trying to help him when he wants to communicate with other children and doesn't know how to without sticking his tongue out and making noises. He's trying to give him the language that isn't coming naturally. I don't see that as a bad thing. And again, we'll discuss that more. But some people would even argue that that's wrong. And I think this is the problem with this issue. It is so difficult, because where is the line between, you know, helping with these skills that are lacking and ABA? And as I discuss more, this is what I want you to have in your mind. So again, why is it so important? Who is this actually for? And where is the line?
Is it for the child or is it for the parent?
Yeah, absolutely. And if it's for the parent, is it really for the parent? Or is it so the parent feels less exposed and judged and vulnerable and isolated within society? It's just opened up such a can of worms. And
yep.
It's just too big a subject, like I said, to cover in one podcast and to do it really justice. But I just feel like it's really important to go there, to be honest. And I've been told I'm mad because apparently, you know, this can get you subject to attack. But the fact is, the whole point is about having these conversations. Even if I get something wrong, feel free to correct me. We don't have to be nasty to each other. The fact is, we don't all know everything. And sometimes somebody else can come to you with a better argument or better evidence. But if you don't start the conversation, how do you grow? How do you learn? So I I'm not shying away from this topic, like you said. I think it's something we do need to cover. And actually, I think I am covering it in quite a balanced and diplomatic way. Some people may disagree. But, you know, I have every right to say what I want to say. And I just hope we can all have an open mind and actually discuss this as adult human beings that ultimately, all at the end of the day, just want what's best for the children. So let's all keep that in mind, but ask these questions as we go through. So, Quirky Steamy Cool, degree in ABA, and I've just really basically put, she's talked about structured developmental goals. And she said, you know, you'd have babies and it'd be getting them to sit up at a certain point. And it all sounds quite innocent, but as they get older, as the children get older, each age group has something that they have to achieve. And she said, for example, having to use waiting words. And immediately I'm going to my teaching experience, you know, all the things we had to teach the children, which again, I'll come back to. One of the scripts that she said, and she said she couldn't completely give you the script. They actually were taught scripts to teach the children things they had to say. And it was repeated over and over and over until it was absolutely ingrained in them to follow this procedure and this process. From my understanding, I think due to like some kind of copyright issue, because I can't remember, but it's something to do with that. She can't completely tell you all the scripts, but it's something like this. When someone says my name, I stop what I'm doing, look at them in the eyes and say yes. And this would be repetitively drummed in and drilled, essentially, and the child would have to learn this script. And straight away that, you know, again, you don't think you're doing any damage with that, do you? But there's something in schools that they do, and I've noticed my son's school does something like it. It's something like listening ears, looking eyes, and every time I hear it, it makes me cringe, because I remember as a child like really wanting to please and doing all these things. You know, I was a bit more able to do them, but he can't. So straight away he's a failure because he's not able to actually do those things, or at least long term. I've even caught myself sometimes saying, "Come here, can you look at this, please?" And you think, oh my gosh, you know, I'm slipping into it myself at times. And again, this opens up a bigger question. You know, what is ABA? We're kind of compartmentalizing it as it's just these programs and these places where children go, or schools where they have all these hours of one-to-one or group therapy where they're trained to be a certain person or trained to not be themselves. But actually, I've just instantly made parallels with the school system. What is ABA? It's used all around us, isn't it?
The school system, I've got a lot to say about that.
I know you have. I think there's so much to say, but we really do have to try and kind of keep it in the vein of ABA here.
We will.
But my point is, I'm thinking about everything. Like, okay, so what is ABA? So we've got the school system teaching the children these scripts and these things they must do. I've taught so many times about in the classroom. And again, I've done it. I was a teacher. I've done it. Right, everybody, okay, everybody sit still. Everybody look at the board. Oh, you're not looking at the board. Why have you got that in your hands? Why are you swinging on your chair? Put that down, thank you. Look this way. Nope, I don't want you fiddling. Put your hands on the table. These are the things you're taught as a teacher that the children must be doing, because otherwise you're not doing your job properly. And when you're observed, these are the things that are kind of ticked off. If a child happens to be gazing around the room, you haven't engaged them enough. If a child is doodling, it's because you're a failure of a teacher. So it becomes very important for you as teacher to train these children to behave a certain way in order to show the observer that these children are engaged. And actually, the reality was, I always knew that doodling didn't mean they weren't engaged. I knew if they were looking around the classroom, they weren't necessarily not listening. And the reason I knew that is because as an autistic person, when I was in staff meetings, I doodled, I looked around the classroom, you know, but I was still engaged, I was still listening. It was just too much for me to put all of my attention on a certain person. And so again, ABA, is it just literally a strict structured program, or is it literally all around us? And therefore, this is where the line gets blurred. What's acceptable, what's not? There's so many questions to ask as we go through this. But that did make me feel uneasy, you know, and also they look at them in the eyes and say yes, especially for autistic children. Now, some children can make eye contact, but for some it's really difficult. And sustained eye contact, I think, is difficult for anyone, neurotypical or autistic, surely. If you are being basically forced to put your focus on somebody and looking in their eyes and their face, I think that's uncomfortable, because there are so many factors around that, including like how much you trust that person, how comfortable you are. There's just so many things that affect that. So that made me uncomfortable. If a child didn't perform well, although many did, they all stuck to these scripts, and she said they were like model citizens. If they didn't perform well, they were then sent to other rooms for more direct training, and she was never a part of that, so she doesn't know what that entails.
Wow.
Yeah, I think this is where she was starting to see that, okay, this isn't, I don't think this is quite right. I don't feel comfortable with this. I have some more examples if you're happy for me to continue.
I'm just thinking the word obey.
Is that not what people want, though, from children in society? Like, again, another thing from the next list that I'm about to share with you that just kept coming to my mind was our families. And as well-meaning as they are, like, we love them, but they don't really understand PDA, the PDA profile of autism. In fact, I don't think any of them fully understand autism, but they totally don't. Not one of them really fully gets PDA. They try, some of them. And the reason I'm going there is because of this next part. We are constantly made to feel or directly told that the children need to be smacked and the children need this and the children need that. And if we led by fear and we terrified our children, they wouldn't do things. And there's a big part of me thinking, actually, the way they are, I don't think it would matter what you did. They are still who they are and they would resist you. But actually, I think of any human being, yes, if you break them down enough and you make them feel terrified of your mere presence, maybe they will learn to not cry, scream, hit out at you, throw things at you. But at the same time, you're then denying them those opportunities to feel those feelings and for you to be able to give them that security and to create those bonds. And again, I just think you're on dangerous ground when you are trying to eradicate certain behaviours in anyone. And
it's essentially eradicating aspects of the human emotion.
Exactly, really. And I think the thing is, the difference between neurotypical and autistic people, particularly younger children, and particularly those with the PDA profile, from our experience, is, you know, they kind of have the same approach to each and their individuals. And then they'll say, well, this child can do this. Yes, because they're developmentally where they need to be. But like Dr. Ross Green says in The Explosive Child, it is, you know, the children who are experiencing these issues, it's not because they're bad children. It is merely because there are skills, there are gaps in their development. And it's not, again, because they're less than. It doesn't mean they never get there either. But all children have kind of ebbs and flows, and they get where they're going at different rates. And that is academically, it's socially, it's emotionally. And I think with our children, yes, they are, you know, especially our eldest, he's notably behind on a social and emotional level. And even we have to remind ourselves of that sometimes. He's 6 years old, but he's not really in that sense. And but people just want to put you into this little box, which we've talked about many a time, and they just want you to have a certain approach. And, you know, well, he will learn, he needs to learn. And actually, he doesn't need to learn anything. That's the whole point of why we protect him and have him at home. We are big believers in this is who he is. He will get there with nurture, support, caring and love. But he will do it in his own time, on his own terms. People see that as pandering, because if we just smacked him or terrified him or shouted at him a bit more, maybe he wouldn't act like that. But at the same time, I feel like we'd be losing a lot of the child. And I don't want that. I want him to develop and feel secure as he does it. Anyway, that's my two cents. So, Mad as a Bird blog. This one's been circulating, and I was actually forwarded this, was forwarded a link, and this was on the page that was forwarded to me. This person said, ABA, autism is a behavioural disorder, and she actually aligned ABA with dog training. So it's based on a lot of praise and reward and giving rewards for things. And again, my mind went straight to the classroom. You have the reward charts on the wall. It doesn't work for every child, but you're forced to do it. How many times have I said to you that I've been resentful over the Ed Sykes when they've come in?
100%.
And again, I'm not having a go at all of them. I'm sorry, Ed Sykes, who actually really do their job brilliantly. But it was something early in my career that I thought, oh, should I go into, you know, being a head teacher, or should I go into educational psychology? And then I met several Ed Sykes whose only recommendation was ever a sticker chart. And it was always really insulting, as though we wouldn't have done that already. You know, it was the same stuff. And it was never anything revolutionary. It didn't really feel like it was very individualized. And actually, it didn't work for all children. But they just wouldn't accept that. It's obviously because you as a school are doing something wrong. But yet again, everything is praise and reward. And have I used these systems? Absolutely, I have. I've used everything because it's part of your training when you're teaching. I rejected an awful lot too, after realising that no, they don't work, or trying something and thinking, not comfortable with this. The one I hated was putting names on boards. Did not like that. That's just humiliation. If a child misbehaved, you put their name on the board. And I remember being taught that by a teacher I was training with, and I rejected that when I was a teacher. I just thought I'd be so humiliated if my name was on that board. However, the reward chart, seeing other children go up when you're always behind or being put back down. So I used to always give the children who were a bit more challenging or were not always achieving in the same way the opportunities to kind of earn things and go up. But actually, again, it doesn't work for all. It doesn't work for our children whatsoever. So again, I keep kind of making these parallels because that's kind of what I see, is that we use it all around us. So, but she said that they use strategies such... Oh, by the way, just to quickly add, she said there was no education about autism, and the whole... For the years that she worked there, there was actually no training about autism, because again, it was seen as a behavioural disorder and something that needed to be corrected. And she said, you know, you literally could come off of the street and go into that job because they weren't seen... You know, it wasn't about having to have the awareness of the autistic person. That autistic person needed to essentially be...
destroyed.
Well, yeah. So the kind of strategies they used were planned ignoring. So if a child was distressed, they just ignored them.
Wow.
Yeah. Restraint. If they had meltdowns, you don't show them empathy because that will only reinforce the behaviour. And you had to desensitize children to uncomfortable sensory experiences. So basically, they just had to learn to endure them and not react. And then they would earn rewards. One of the things she's written about is, you know, they're not allowed to stim or have any of those kinds of behaviors. And they had to sit there and have quiet hands. And then if they earned their, say, 4 rewards or their 4 tokens, they could then move their body how they wanted. For these specific strategies, I'm quite horrified. I think that is abuse.
If you were to then say, right, full stop, that's ABA in its entirety, I would say, go fuck yourself, ABA, and whoever practices it, yeah, you can fuck yourself too. Now, feel free at this stage to try and enlighten me and change my mind, but right now, fuck right off. And there's no way in hell my kid is going through that.
No. Well, we've already said that we find a lot of the targets in the HCP.
Bullshit.
Everything we've come across so far, we're like, that's very ableist.
Bullshit.
No, they're trying to make him a neurotypical. And for me, actually, it's the use of the word appropriate all the time. Appropriate behaviours. I admit that when he's hit out or spat or whatever, it's not appropriate.
No.
However, what they fail to acknowledge is why he's acting like it. He's in distress. And they say, well, that child isn't doing that. But that child's actually able to sit in a classroom, look at a board, and not feel distressed, and not get overwhelmed by the sensory overload, not be overwhelmed by the demand. They don't feel the need to run out of the classroom. They're not in fight or flight mode. So how can you compare the two? It's just absolutely insane. And
it starts with the environment.
Exactly. And again, being a teacher, I can absolutely empathise with the people working in that building and the challenges they have with the workload, all the other children, the targets they have, the observations, Ofsted. I totally get it. So I'm not having a dig at teachers because I think they where they can go above and beyond, and they're stretched and they're not really appreciated. Our government attacks them. Our papers attack them. At the end of the day, I do understand why it's just a little bit harder for them. The reality of actually dealing with this stuff, I get it. However, when you then receive targets that he's been inappropriate, you have to think about, okay, you're using the word inappropriate or inappropriate for his age, but why is that and how can we help him? And that is where a lot of people seem to fail. So they were two that I've come across. There's many more, but they really stood out to me, and I've just seen them going around and I thought, you know, they needed to be mentioned, and how brave of them,
yeah,
to share this, because that is, again, very triggering stuff. You will hear paper turning because I have so many notes that I probably won't be able to get through, so I apologise.
That's the experience.
Okay. There was another article in Spectrum News from August 2016 that I came across. I apologise if I pronounce any names wrong. This was the most comprehensive article that I came across, and essentially I'm cheating. So I'm going to tell you who wrote it, because otherwise it is a big copyright issue here. But I'm basically lifting most of the stuff that she has said, because it is just so well balanced, and it just echoes everything else I've read. So although there are so many other sources that corroborate, I just felt this was comprehensive enough in its own right to be used. Her name is Elizabeth DeVita Rayburn. I may have pronounced that wrong. And she actually wrote about this being the most common therapy and basically, is it cruel? What I've tried to do is lift a lot of her content into a pros and cons column. And I've also then added other aspects from other resources. So pros and cons. Now, some people will say, there are no pros, there are no cons. I've noticed
it's
on...
It's subjective.
I've seen a lot of adverts coming up recently for ABA. I have no idea why they keep coming into my feed, but yes, so many. But some of the providers are like more acceptable than others. And again, people might disagree, no, it's all evil. Okay, that's fine if that's your opinion. But my point is some of them seem to focus on let's help autistic people to thrive. Let's help them with things they're having issues with. You know, maybe they're having communication issues and they need a bit of a boost in that area. Let's help them. That doesn't offend me as greatly. There are others where they say, oh, you know, autism is this mental health issue. We need to cure this autism. We need to reverse autism. Come here and we will decrease the autistic behaviours. And that does not sit well. That, to me, is harmful. And straight away, just in the wording that's used, you can tell that that is a provider that is going to use those strategies that we've already mentioned that are damaging. And so this then led me to think, okay, so is there like a kind of a better ABA and a worse ABA? Some parents, from the things that I've been reading, have had really good experiences with ABA. And then they've been attacked by autistic advocates, which I totally understand as well. But then they've said, hey, you know, my children are getting on really well in that, thank you. And the autistic advocate has said, no, it's really damaging. When they get older, they're going to be absolutely screwed up. And I think the problem is we don't have enough autistic adults who've been recipients of it to really know. In this article, there is a recipient of ABA, and he basically does say how it's damaging. He passed as neurotypical enough to be able to go through his school life, not really posing any problems for the people around him. But what they didn't know was that internally he still felt different and just didn't know why. And I don't think his parents actually told him he was autistic. So it took him a long time to realise, ah, this is why I feel so different. So again, it's this masking element.
So what we're saying is, outwardly to society, he'll function as a masking autistic who presents as neurotypical.
Yes.
But inside, the actual damage is going on because they are still autistic. That has never changed.
No. So ABA might be able to help you mask better, but it feels, again, gosh, there's so many questions
that
this
like
raises.
Acting classes for autistics.
It is. But then I was thinking this myself. I masked my whole life. I still mask. I am unmasking now, finally. But I naturally learned to do that. Nobody made me do it as such. I mean, there were things where I learned, oh, best not do that again because I got called mental or I had a funny look. So I think you do have elements of your life where you think, okay, that's obviously not the right thing to do.
It's not working.
So I suppose, and then also thinking, so what's more harmful? Is it having ABA and being essentially forced to not be yourself and forced to mask? Is it not having any support, not knowing that you're different? Is it naturally learning to mask? Or are they equally all as damaging? Again, I have no answer. They're just questions that came up in my mind as I was reading all of this stuff. The other thing I've read about is how it tends to be, and again, I don't want to word this in an offensive manner, but I don't know how else to word it. It appears that the people who benefit the most from ABA techniques, and again, I'm not talking about the oppressive classic strategies, I'm talking about more of the modern play-based, you know, let's help your child communicate. Your child can't talk, let's help them learn to talk, let's help them learn to communicate. Some people will say, well, no, that's disgraceful, but you know, you can understand why some parents feel the need to go down that route. And there's one parent that said, my child's beaming because they've gone from not being able to talk and communicate to now being able to communicate. And I don't know what the program entailed, obviously, but this parent was happy and apparently the child was happy. I can't comment because I'm not part of that family, but I've read so many stories like this. But in this situation, they weren't going to ABA lots of hours a week to completely change the child. It was about this one area of need and it was building a skill that was lacking. And apparently now as a family, they're all happier. But an autistic advocate absolutely attacked the mum. And so you've got this, it's really difficult because I think what's happening is people are seeing the word ABA and just attacking, which is totally understandable. But it does appear that it's shifted over the years and that a lot of the current providers, it's more of a play therapy. And then some of the autistics are saying, well, it's still evil, it's still damaging, it's still long-term, you know, awful, it's still making these autistic children feel that they can't be themselves. And this is where things now are becoming very blurry for me.
I would compare that to having a toddler and the frustrations of not being able to articulate what you want from your parents because you're not able to. So maybe in that case, you know, they actually gave him a voice, which therefore made it a lot easier to coexist.
But do you think perhaps in this situation, if it is literally finding skills that a parent is saying, right, they're really struggling in this one area, and I know that my child really wants to be able to do this, or I want them to, or older children to say, oh, I'm struggling in this area, and I would really like some help with this, because that also does happen. Our child has even asked for support.
I think that's the thing, because if the child shows an interest and wants to learn a new skill, there's nothing wrong with learning skills, including soft skills, as that's normally what they call it, don't they? Social skills, like soft skills. There's nothing wrong with teaching an autistic kid.
But again, maybe
certain things.
Maybe they should remarket this as not ABA. If it is teaching a specific skill to somebody who actually requires it, who wants it, then maybe that shouldn't be called ABA.
Yeah, I mean, it seems different to the whole, we're going to change every aspect of you in conformity and we're going to just basically rewire the autistic brain even though you cannot.
Yeah, this gentleman in the article said that he was made to feel ashamed of himself and that actually his parents then also used the techniques on him because they were taught to do it to him as well.
No.
And that's the problem. A lot of the adverts I've seen for ABA, and this is where, again, the problem comes in for me, are they're fear-mongering, they're scaring parents into basically your child has autism and life is ruined. Come to us so we can give them life.
Salvation is here.
And this is where the autism mum thing comes up now. So obviously there is like a real division in the community between autism mums and autistic people. Even though I really do believe that a lot of the autism mums having autistic children are probably autistic themselves or their partners are.
Yeah, more likely.
That's my opinion. And then some people will say, well, no, because they wouldn't act like that. Actually, yes. If you speak to a lot of autistic people, especially late diagnosed, you'll realise that a lot of people said and did very different things before they realised who they were.
Yep.
And then that journey of self-discovery opens up a lot of doors for you and you start to kind of reevaluate everything. And so many, even like big advocates, have admitted that they've done wrong in the past before they realised who they were. And they've done wrong with their own children. And you'd think, oh, I could recognise that in my child. But actually, I think until you know who you are, sometimes it's not easy to. When you have got society and programmes like this and professionals constantly telling you that your child is disordered and a list of deficits.
And needs fixing.
And needs fixing and needs medicating and needs to fit into the social model. And needs to be more neurotypical, it's really hard for you to go against that. And we've talked about this. You know, there are so many parents who've lost their fight or they don't have it to start with, or they don't have the knowledge, or they trust the professionals. And I always feel like I'm bashing professionals. And I know that there are some really, really good ones out there, but actually there are so many incompetent ones too, who don't know what they're talking about. They are out of date. It's a tick box exercise. They don't see you as people. And they certainly don't listen to parents.
They're just there stealing a wage.
And so I think there are some autism mums I've come across and they are your stereotypical use the child. And it does appear that there's an element of attention seeking. I know there was a lady in the last couple of years or so who I think adopted an autistic son. And then there was a lot of controversy surrounding that. I'm not going to go into the details, but
no.
There are a lot of people who do present in this way and fit the stereotype, and I can understand the frustration around those mums, but I have to believe, as a mum, that most mums really do want what's best for their children, and they might be misinformed, but it's not their fault, because society is telling them the last thing you want your child to be is autistic. I've shared before, but we told somebody once, didn't we, a professional, not in the autism field, but in another field, she was doing some work with us for something, and we told her our son was autistic because she'd witnessed a meltdown, and she said, oh no, what's the life expectancy? So this is the kind of ignorance that you're dealing with in the mainstream. So again,
congenital heart defect.
But I do feel that there is that a lot of these providers that I've seen do really prey on the vulnerability of these autism mums. I know they hate being called that. I just don't know how else to refer to them, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I try so hard not to be belittling of the autism mum, because how are you supposed to know? You trust these professionals and what they're telling you. And if they're telling you your child needs to go and learn how to not be themselves, I think to on some level, even if you don't feel that it's right, you are challenged or your child is challenged and you just want everything to be normal. Of course you do.
As well as that, to be honest, you are so worn down raising a kid on the spectrum that you're probably just like, yeah, okay.
I think a lot of people do kind of really dismiss how tough it actually can be. And
yeah,
I read
tough.
Something this week saying, oh, I hate these mums that whinge about their children. I agree, it's horrible when people whinge about their children. But every so often, I've been guilty of it. Because do you know what? When I'm being attacked all day, when I'm being headbutted, hit, verbally, you know, shouted at and horrible things being said, I try so hard not to take it personally. But sometimes you're human too. And I think people forget you are human too. And these mums probably find a support network in people. And I do think that their fears are preyed upon. I really do. In comes the autistic advocate, you know, obviously so passionately wanting to help that child. But the mum is obviously not going to receive this well, because you've just essentially shouted them down and told them everything they're doing is wrong for their own child.
Nice.
And some of them, admittedly, I don't always think it is about the child. I've come across those individuals, but there are not many of them. The majority really are doing what they think is best for their children. So when somebody comes and shouts at them and makes them feel like a bad person, you're not going to get a good conversation.
No, because at the end of the day, you're already being question over your parenting because your kid's melting down and is being a brat.
Absolutely. But by the same token, flipping it over, we as autistic adults, I've even read these interactions. You might be autistic, but you don't speak for my child. You're not like my child. Not at the moment, but as they grow up, they will become us or like us. And we do know, we do have that experience.
We've been there.
And what we're trying to do is to help your child and to protect them and to not see them go through the trauma that so many of us have been through. And it is just such a shame that we can't all come together and actually think of what the right thing is for these children, because your child will be an autistic adult one day and they will probably want to put their voice out there to help other children. And how will you feel when people are shouting them down? There's just so much of this in the community and it's really upsetting. I've read so many mums saying how brilliant ABA has been for their children. So we are going to look at the pros. So the pros of ABA are parents are trying to help their child. There's individualized support. A range of skills are supported from writing, speaking to toileting. Can help parents who otherwise just don't know where to turn or what to do. Some parents feel their child is happier after embarking on the program. It seems to be a better alternative to what used to happen before Ivor Lovaas, who is the gentleman, the psychologist in the 1960s, who started the ABA program for autistic children. And apparently this is a better alternative than institutionalization, which is what was happening to autistic people before. The inappropriate behaviors are decreased. We already know how I feel about the word inappropriate. And appropriate behaviors increased, for example, speech, play, IQ. In modern times, it has become more flexible and different approaches like play therapy have been adopted. It is a teaching of skills and gaps in skills rather than normalizing and suppressing individuals. And it just focuses on help in areas that are needed and wanted, not changing who the person is. So that's apparently the shift from then to now. But as I said, I've already looked at a lot of providers and it is a mixed bag. And some are not pure. Some I do think have the best intentions and maybe should rename themselves to something like consultants, skills development, something like that, because I just don't think the term is helpful anymore if you are genuinely just trying to fill gaps for individuals. Okay, and then the cons, there are a lot more, I'm afraid. Okay, so the cons are long-term trauma, issues with self-acceptance, can consume a lot of time, up to 40 hours per week. And that is like pretty intensive to put children through, isn't it?
And that's going to be expensive as
terms well. Such as age appropriate. Trying to cure autism and make recipients normal or neurotypical.
You don't cure autism, by the way.
No. Adults who received it as a child are against it. It doesn't accept the individual. It wants to fix their difference. ABA can be predatory, making parents feel there is no hope without it. It scripts children, but it doesn't necessarily mean they can apply these scripts to the real world. And we've even had experience of this, where we've taught our child scripts.
Practical application in a real life situation.
And then as soon as it comes off script, he repeats it or makes a noise, or we've talked about this before.
Yep.
And that wasn't us trying to do ABA, it was just us trying to help him communicate with other children. So there's no real understanding of the things they're being taught, but this doesn't matter as long as they appear normal. So nobody really cares actually what's going on inside. It can be very confusing to the child. It encourages masking. Goals such as eye contact and physical contact to make them as normal as possible are uncomfortable and damaging. The advocates and actually autistic people are just not listened to. They discourage stimming. They give physical punishments, shouting, and in the early years, shock therapy, repetitive constant drills. Parents then perceive their child in their natural state as broken and inappropriate and reinforce the negative and damaging approaches they are taught by ABA. There are punishments to children who struggle with their sensory world, and they are punished by the use of bad smells, bad tastes, and loud sounds in response to behaviour such as self-injury. So for example, when our child has hit himself in the head, they would use those strategies to make him learn not to do them.
Wow.
Yeah, this is what I mean. It's a mixed bag, isn't it? There's a big difference between what I described earlier with helping a child to learn communication and what this is. And this is what I mean. ABA, through this definition, in my opinion, is abuse and should be
eradicated.
Obliterated, yeah. But the other thing I don't really feel is ABA, and yet it's advertised as the same thing. And I think this is what, to me, is jarring and what has really surprised me with my research. Is it's not really as cut and dry as I was expecting it to be. There are a lot of other things as well. But as I said earlier, it does say that the cases of people with intellectual disabilities and those who need a lot more support, it can help with those people. However, the advocates are saying actually, no, they're the children, they're the people who do need protecting from it because they don't have the voice. And I swear, and I really should have looked this up before the podcast, but I'm sure Harry Thompson recently shared that little boy. It was somebody else's post and he shared it, and I'm sure I shared it on the blog, and he was unable to communicate, and I believe he was in ABA, and then he was given this way to communicate, and he actually wrote basically like, fuck you.
What a legend. Yeah,
but my point is, and I think they asked him to not program that in there, like you need to remove it.
No.
That's his words. That's his communication. That was obviously how he felt from that experience.
Fair play. I love that. But again, to be fair,
he wasn't an intellectually disabled individual. No, clearly not. He was just nonverbal, and people seem to put that in the same category.
Do not confuse the two people. No.
There's a place for these skills to be taught, but it really shouldn't come under the vein of ABA. And some people might say, well, you've totally missed the point because ABA is this. But actually, what I'm trying to say to you is from the research I've done, there are a lot of providers calling themselves ABA who aren't all presenting the same thing.
There's a broad brush on this.
It's what's really tricky, to be honest with you. Mm. One of the questions I've put is, do the ABA providers really care about the individual? Is it just a profit-making tool for them? Do they really respect the skills and talents of autistic people? Are they promoting a damaging message?
First of all, if money's exchanging, then clearly they're in it for profit and it's a business. So it's not like it's charity work.
No.
So that will corrupt the argument a little bit.
Something that came to my mind, actually, while I was doing all this research was Love on the Spectrum, that program we watched. We aren't big fans of Undateables and Love on the Spectrum. Like, I love the individuals on it, don't get me wrong, and it's not anything to do with the individuals. It's a spectrum, and you really should represent every part of it. And, you know, I'm a big believer in that. But I still always feel like the media choose specific
stereotypes,
representations and stereotypes, because that's kind of what they want to promote. And I guess it isn't as exciting to watch somebody like me and you
it'd be boring as fuck
going out for a date. Yeah. It's not the same. I understand.
Yeah, just be like, okay, yeah, they look like anyone else doing normal shit.
Yeah, you know, look the same. Not the same, but, you know.
See, that's the trouble. When you present a certain way, therefore you cannot possibly be autistic.
Yeah, and people just don't realise. But that's another discussion.
Yeah.
I'm trying to rein this in. But actually, the love on the spectrum, the bit that stuck out to me. Do you remember that lady on there that she was teaching the... They were teaching skills on how to go on a date, what questions to ask, how to speak to the woman, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then she came and did like a doodle with him. And I was actually really agitated. Everyone was like, oh, she's so brilliant. And I was agitated.
I thought it was a bit patronizing.
That's how I found it. But actually, do you know what? Again, there is a place for this for some people. And they obviously wanted it. The gentleman went to that seminar, that training where he got to go and ask questions and work out how to speak to somebody. And, you know, and I think you have to respect that sometimes the individual... They want that for themselves. And so why shouldn't people provide these support strategies if it is actually needed? And some autistic people do benefit from it. It's a very, very tricky, very complex thing. Somebody did say in one of the comments, and I loved it, was actually, has anyone considered that it's not the autistic person that needs ABA therapy? It's actually the neurotypicals or the neurotypical parent in some cases, you know? No. They need to learn how to understand and accept and support their child. And I think that's why so many autistic people offer services such as consultancy, because it's to, in a more gentle way, speak from the child's perspective to the parent and enable them to do it in a more nurturing way. Like I said earlier, where is the line to ABA? We're teaching people how to be, like, all the time. I will tell you that my opinion is that your child is awesome as they are, and if they do have some difficulties in certain areas, then by all means try and get support for those areas. But actually, as parents, I really would actually say reach out to autistic people like us, because we can support you or at least point you in the right direction. Just because your child is autistic does not mean they do not have anything ahead of them. Whilst appreciating it's a spectrum, we watched a Luthery program, and we do know that everybody's experience is very different.
Yeah.
And that's another discussion entirely. Please celebrate your child.
Don't write your kid off too early.
Just don't write them off. And if you do really think ABA might be something you want to look into, please look into the provider really thoroughly and just check they're not kind of treating it as a tragedy and something that needs to be reversed, because it is not the case. You just need to support your child to thrive and to be able to fill any of those gaps. And in my opinion, the best way to do that is to actually approach autistic people who can help you. But ABA, in my personal opinion, is not the right approach, but that is for you to decide. What's your opinion before we sign off?
I feel the same instinct tells me that it's a crock of shit, and that really the overarching thing is, no, what you're trying to do, what's your objective? You cannot cure autism, and I wouldn't want to alter my child to the point where they are a shell of themselves just for them to fit into society.
You might think they're happy fitting in because obviously they can receive so much trauma from bullying when they stand out.
Yeah.
But they are always going to stand out. Even if you teach them, as that other gentleman said, to act a certain way to fit in, there is something innately within you that makes you different. And other people pick up on it whether you want them to or not.
Yeah, it sounds like you have an aura and people tune into it.
So instead, help them, but embrace them and just make them feel special and just let them know that they're actually awesome, because that's what my belief is. It really is. Like the way our children act, like some people think it's odd how they kind of kiss inanimate objects or jump around and they're a bit over the top. But their overreactions, to be honest with you, are one of the things I love. Like the outpouring of joy that they can't hide when they're jumping up and down and flapping their hands. Why on earth would you want to reverse these things? Why would you want to take these things away from them? It's just endearing and beautiful, and they're just so happy being.
Why would you want to stop them from being happy?
Yeah, just being themselves.
Yeah, and I'd also like to say, like I said, you're looking at your kid now as a child. You need to look into the future and see them as an adult. That's very important, that you control the narrative growing up. And that's an empowering narrative. And that they're not broken. You're not there to fix them. You're there to guide them into adulthood so they can then fend for themselves, fingers crossed.
And if you're going to fight or change anyone, you need to change the attitude of the people around you.
And whenever needed to be, change the environment as well. So that's it. That's it from me.
Thanks for listening.
Cheers.